If God is for us, who can be against us? These strong words from Romans chapter 8, in a way, are words of wonder. They're words of wonder in the sense that they are reminding us of God's expansive and all-encompassing love and grace and compassion and strength and power and presence. In a similar way, our other passage for today, Psalm 139, offers a similar kind of wonder, and yet it's wonder in a minor key. Romans itself has sort of a minor key behind it because Paul is addressing an issue in the Mediterranean world of the broader Christian church and the church in Rome that is troubling. There's some difficulties. There's some tensions that are needing to be addressed. And the backdrop of this chapter 8 in Romans is a stressful situation that needs to be confronted redemptively but clearly. And within that, there is a sense of wonder, but it's wonder in a minor key. There's sadness sort of lurking in the background of this passage as well as Psalm 139. We'll specifically focus on Psalm 139 in our sermon today. Wonder in a minor key. You are aware, as I am, that this pandemic is longer and deeper and more complicated than any of us ever imagined. We are all trying to adjust in ways that we can and that are hopeful and redemptive. We want still to experience the wonder of one another and being church and experiencing God's love in our lives wherever we are. And yet we also are aware it's with kind of a minor key. There's a lingering sadness that is a part of what we're all trying to make it through right now. We're not quite sure what the future holds. We're not quite sure exactly when we're going to be able to come back and worship together as a congregation in person. We're not exactly sure how our overall society is going to cope with the long-term experiences of COVID-19 and coping with this pandemic experience. Psalm 139 is a very relevant word for us today. We had this passage also last week. We began our movement through that very important part of Psalm 139. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. We said last week the image of Sheol is particularly poignant for that time and this time because it was sort of a place of nothingness, a place of just kind of nothing really matters, of giving up. It was equivalent to the Roman world of dis, that is the just sort of you disappear, you are just kind of ephemeral, and there's nothing to your existence anymore. And this poignant word of just kind of throwing up your hands and what's the point? It doesn't matter. Or if I say, let only darkness cover me and the light about me be night. In other words, if I am just at the point of throwing everything out, it's not that I don't care as I would in this sense of Sheol, but when I say, let only darkness cover me, it is a moment of intense hurt and pain. And it's not that I don't care anymore. It's that I care so much. I am furious and I want to give away everything. I want to throw it all out. The range of emotion here, this backdrop of intense feeling really speaks to the power of these words. It is wonder that is conveyed through Psalm 139. We'll say more about it in a moment. But it's the backdrop of this is this minor key of sadness, of discouragement. There has been a real experience of pain and loss. The author of this psalm is keenly aware of the difficulty of life and what this person has gone through, has made it through, and yet has survived. So we begin simply with the experience of life and how these words in all the Psalms, but particularly in Psalm 139, engage our hearts and minds and spirits on this day and in this time, because these words of wonder really have a true understanding of what you and I are experiencing, the sadness, this minor keyness of trying to figure out, what do we do now? What do we do tomorrow? What do we do with this looming uncertainty of how we're going to ultimately cope with where we are and what we're dealing with? Walter Brueggemann does what I think is an excellent job of categorizing the Psalms in basically three categories. Brueggemann says there are Psalms of orientation, there are Psalms of disorientation, and there are Psalms of new orientation. So we need to say very clearly, first of all, that when many of us were growing up, we heard only from the Psalms that were happy and joyful and offering praises, when in fact, there are probably a third to a half of the Psalms that are Psalms of lament, because they are, as Brueggemann categorizes them, Psalms of disorientation. That is, they are confession Psalms that things have not worked out. Things are frightening. Things have fallen apart. A good example of a psalm of disorientation is Psalm 137. Let me just read a little bit of that psalm for you, because what the author of Psalm 137 is conveying is an actual moment in history of the Jewish people where there has been an intense tragedy. The trauma of the Babylonian exile has registered in the hearts and the minds and the spirits of these people. And listen to Psalm 107 as this lament, this actually angry crying out of deep sadness, this minor keyness of this psalm of disorientation. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and there we wept. When we remembered Zion, on the willows there we hung up our harps, for there our captors ask us for songs, and our tormentors ask us for mirth, saying, hey, sing us one of those songs of Zion. You hear in these poignant words not only people missing where they came from, they've been ripped from their homes, the temple's been destroyed, Jerusalem lies in ruins, they are now in a foreign land in Babylon, and they're trying to sort themselves out, learn new languages, figure out how to survive, and yet their tormentors, their captors, by the way, they are prisoners of war, and these captors are saying to them, hey, sing us some of your songs, tell us some of the jokes that came out of your land. Won't that be fun? Now, it's not enough that they have experienced the trauma of loss, defeat, death of loved ones and people they cared for, the complete destruction of the land that they loved and that they grew up in, the ever-present potential that their entire heritage is crumbling before their eyes. And now their captors are making fun of them and requiring them to sing some of the songs that they used to sing on the front porches of their houses back in the land that no longer exists. How would you feel? This is a psalm of extreme disorientation. It is a group of people who are, their lives have been fragmented, ripped apart, their hearts have been torn out, and they are not only hurting, but they are angry. For listen to these words now in this psalm of disorientation as Psalm 137 continues. Against you, O Babylon, the daughter of Babylon, you devastator, happy shall they be who pay you back and get revenge what you have done to us. Happy shall they be who take your little ones and cast their heads against a stone. In other words, how beautiful it will be to have your babies destroyed for what you've done for us. Revenge is sweetest when it is served cold. This is a psalm of disorientation. This is a loud cry of not only anguish, but deep anger and a desire for retribution and revenge. This is Psalm 137. It comes right before these words of wonder and grace in Psalm 139, likely being composed in the same place, maybe a little after, where there has been some opportunity to heal a little bit, to gain perspective, to have a recasted faith and a renewed sense of theology, that is, a sense of who God is, what God is, where God is, and how God just might be working in the midst of this extreme difficulty and tragedy. Psalm 139, then, we pick up on the words where we left off last week, this sense of being in Sheol, of nothingness, of just not caring anymore, or this sense of crying out, "Let only darkness cover me and the light about me be night. I am angry and I'm hurting and I want to just call out, it doesn't matter anymore, I don't care." And yet the psalm continues, "I actually now am beginning to get a sense, O God, of your presence in my life. For even when I am at that point of wanting to throw everything away and give up completely, I realize, even in those darkest times, you are there with me. For where can I flee from your presence? Where can I go from your being with me and surrounding me? You are wherever I am. And in fact, you are wherever I yet will be. Your presence is there, not only with me, but among the people who, going back to Psalm 137, who were my tormentors and captors." There is a resonating sense in Psalm 139 that emerges also in Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah, that even for my captors, even the people that I am wanting so badly to hate, even them, even they have your encompassing grace and goodness at their ready. You are their God too. There is coming to grips here in this new theological learning and understanding that is taking place in the midst of the tragedy of exile and captivity, that somehow God is at work even in this minor keyness and among the people that don't even know or understand or care, that God is doing something good and valuable and life-changing. Psalm 139, then, is a psalm that emerges out of what Brueggemann calls psalms of disorientation. And the third category, psalms of orientation, psalms of disorientation, the third category is psalms of new orientation. That is, the psalmist has moved from these disorienting, horrible experiences of even theological emergencies where faith has sort of evaporated. Now a new faith has come into being. And in those times in our lives, we know where we sort of cast off what we previously believed. And in some cases have given over to, "I don't believe any of that anymore. I'm not sure what I believe." And these crises of faith, these theological emergencies, for some of us have been times of frightful, what's happening to me? What's happening to my heart? What would my parents think? What would my friends think? What's going on? And in these times of faith crisis, like clearly was happening among the people in captivity in Psalm 137 and moving into Psalm 139, these are frightening times, and yet these are incredible times where a whole new faith can develop and emerge, a stronger, bigger, wider faith. J.B. Phillips, years ago, wrote a little book called Your God is Too Small. And in many ways, that's what's happened in this experience of exile and captivity. The people going into exile began to realize little by little that the God that they previously had worshipped, Yahweh of Judah, was too small. That is, they're now recognizing, as J.B. Phillips tries to point out, that these times in our lives when it feels like the faith that we grew up with has been shattered, that can actually be a good thing, an important thing, a healthy thing that is part of our adult development, our faith development, that needs to happen, that we cast away the smallness of our previous faith, and we prepare our hearts and our spirits for the new faith that God is developing in us through our experience. Which brings us then to the resiliency that occurs with the psalmist and the people in exile, and the call for you and me in times like this one, in times of loss and difficulty, the call to being newly resilient to what it is that we face on a daily basis, learning to cope with a new reality. What happens with Psalm 139 then is these words of wonder now come out of this experience of disorientation, the confession of, I really was ready to throw everything out. I was ready to give up. I was ready to give up on my life. I was ready to give up on my faith, on my people, on my heritage. And now instead, there's this new sense of, within this minor keenness and sadness, a new sense of wonder. For it was you, beginning now with verse 13 in Psalm 139, for it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb, for I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for my life and me, when none of them yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. I try to count them. They are more than the sand. And now I come to an end, and I am still with you. These are words of wonder and of awe, but they're words cast in kind of a minor key, in the sense that the experience of life has been so hard, a new resiliency has emerged out of that experience. And now there is an entirely new perspective that we can call wisdom. There is experience, there is resiliency that comes out of that experience, and now there is wisdom that is a part of that experience and resiliency. This new orientation Brueggemann talks about, that is clear in Psalm 139, this orientation that has seen the disorienting reality of exile, the difficulty of life, the real just gut-wrenching times that you and I experience from time to time. The recognition now of a new orientation, a new faith that has come to heart and mind and spirit that is life-giving. I love the translation of the Hebrew word chokmah, which is the Hebrew word for wisdom. Many scholars say this word is best translated skillful living. We call it wisdom, but I like the translation skillful living. For to be wise is not just to collect a bunch of factual information and memorize it and spout it off to people to impress them how smart you are. It's not just a collection of a bunch of stuff, but it's a collection of that stuff, those experiences of life, the newfound resiliency through those experiences, and the integration of those experiences and resiliency, tough times, good times, lots of interaction with lots of different people, collected into now an ability to live skillfully, to interact, to act and interact with other people in a way that is graceful and redemptive. It is a way of knowing and being known, of loving and being loved, that takes into account the experiences of other people, living, attempting at least to live in their shoes a bit, the wisdom that Jesus calls on us, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. In other words, to continually ask that question, what would it be like to be her or him or them? Skillful living then, this wisdom that emerges out of Psalm 139, this wonder in a minor key, for me, just has a pulsating energy that I hope you can feel this week as you move through the difficulties that all of us are encountering every single day during this pandemic, but also just the daily interactions of just trying to do the right thing and live the right way, make the right decisions within our experience and the resiliency that we're trying to cultivate, and the wisdom, the skillful living of everyday life. The call to this biblical understanding, this Psalm in 139 of new orientation, of allowing our hearts and minds and spirits to be oriented into the sense of the wonder that the psalmist calls us to, and yet wonder in a minor key, in the clear, realistic understanding of how hard life can be sometimes, and yet how beautiful within that difficulty God's grace and presence can be. Many of you are familiar with the Broadway musical Fiddler on the Roof. It is, for me, a great follow-up or conclusion to this work with Psalm 139, in the sense that the Fiddler on the Roof, many of the songs are written in a minor key. There's smiling interactions, there's joyful experience of weddings, but the backdrop of Fiddler on the Roof is 1905 and the revolutionary time of Tsarist Russia, where Jewish people are being horribly persecuted. They're being pushed out of Russia. They are experiencing tremendous bigotry and difficulty and hurt and pain. And yet within this experience in Fiddler on the Roof, there are these songs of love and compassion and searching and wondering and new theological interactions and questions that are being raised. As we conclude our service today, it is with this song from this Broadway musical, Fiddler on the Roof, a Sabbath prayer. And for me, this kind of summarizes our words for today from the sermon, Wonder in a Minor Key. For a Sabbath prayer is a blessing, and it's a blessing that comes on the heels of these difficult circumstances where even at a wedding, soldiers of Tsarist Russia, the Cossacks, come in and destroy the day, turn over the tables, make a ramshackle mess of what should have been a celebration of life. And yet there still is this call to blessing and blessedness. There is a Sabbath prayer in a minor key, a desire for blessing, a call to wonder, and the experience of God's graciousness, even in the difficulties of life. Hear these words, the Sabbath prayer from the Fiddler on the Roof, with that sense of wonder in a minor key that we have together to share this week. Psalm 139, this psalm emerging out of disorientation, giving and casting a new orientation for you and for me, a call to wonder with this clear recognition that life is still hard. Things aren't the way we wish they were, and yet God's not giving up on us. God is with us where we are, even in our most difficult days. Thanks be to God.